funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child, and RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, suing Apple, the U.S. Department of Justice and New Jersey are taking on the tech giant, accusing Apple of creating a smartphone monopoly.
Apple protects its business model by restricting technologies that would make it easier for iPhone customers to switch to another smartphone. Those restrictions go to the core of Apple's unlawful conduct.
Plus, will he run? The embattled U.S. senior senator faces a looming campaign filing deadline.
Theoretically, he could run as an independent. He's really running out of options, and the paths are closing.
Also, learning loss. New data shows the ripple effect of the pandemic is still affecting New Jersey's kids.
State leadership needs to make sure this money is being allocated effectively and to work with the districts to make sure we find the most evidence-based programs that are going to help kids.
And lawmakers are looking to retail stores to donate their excess food to help end the hunger crisis.
Every meal that we can rescue from disposal is a step towards New Jersey figuring out how we are building that sustainable future.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Thursday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. The Department of Justice is taking on Apple, filing a blockbuster antitrust lawsuit in New Jersey federal court today against the tech giant, along with 16 attorneys general, including New Jersey's Matt Plotkin, who's leading the suit for the states. At a press conference today, they accused Apple of holding a smartphone monopoly and alleged the company was able to do so not because it stayed ahead of the competition, but because it broke federal antitrust laws, keeping a chokehold on the market by creating an ecosystem. Think Apple Watch, Apple Pay, even the inability to FaceTime with Android users that blocks developers from competing and makes consumers reliant on Apple's devices, giving them fewer choices and higher prices. The lawsuit points to things like cross-platform messaging, those green bubbles and pixelated videos you get from a non-iPhone. The lawsuit alleges it makes other smartphones appear inferior when, in fact, it's a tactical move. The DOJ says Apple, which has grown to a $3 trillion company owning 70% of the smartphone market, plays by rules established by Apple for Apple.
We allege that Apple has employed a strategy that relies on exclusionary, anti-competitive conduct that hurts both consumers and developers. For consumers, that has meant fewer choices, higher prices and fees, lower quality smartphones, apps, and accessories, and less innovation from Apple and its competitors. For developers, that has meant being forced to play by rules that insulate Apple from competition.
Apple protects its business model by restricting technologies that would make it easier for iPhone customers to switch to another smartphone. Those restrictions go to the core of Apple's unlawful conduct. And the end result is that you pay more money for an inferior product.
Apple responded today saying the company believes, quote, this lawsuit threatens who we are and the principles that set Apple products apart in fiercely competitive markets. It goes on, the lawsuit is wrong on the facts and the law, and we will vigorously defend against it. The Port Authority is rolling along with two more major capital projects that'll impact both the state's commuters and visitors. It includes a long-awaited new transit hub that'll help people going to and from Newark Airport and a big step toward funding the new Midtown bus terminal. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports.
The current Newark Air train station sits isolated amidst a sea of long-term parking lots. It's a point of access to Newark Penn Station and a couple of NJ Transit lines, but no buses run here, no taxis are waiting to take you away. Nothing here helps the nearby neighborhood. That's a problem the Port Authority's finally promised to solve by building a new $160 million airport transit hub connected by a flying bridge over the tracks to the air train.
I'm just so very proud. It may not be the biggest project that the port has done, certainly it's not, but I think in terms of righting a wrong of the past, and the game-changing benefits that will be to residents who so deserve this. This is a really proud day.
As you ask the people in Newark and Elizabeth, to them, this is absolutely monumentally game-changing. It's as big as it gets for them to give them access to schools and work and economic opportunity and public transportation. And they're going to save an hour and a half each way.
The board voted unanimously to approve the new transit hub along Frelinghuysen Avenue, noting it would help airport workers access jobs by cutting current commute times. Bus trips from Newark and Elizabeth that now take 40 minutes could get shortened to 7.
And so this project is really exciting because this opens up educational opportunities, job opportunities, and just making sure that this neighborhood isn't kind of cut off. It's a very low income neighborhood that has very low car ownership. And it will be fantastic to see this community with a new access, with broader connectivity to the rest of the city, as well as the rest of the region.
The Port Authority predicts the new hub could generate thousands of jobs and $290 million in economic activity. It's expected to open in 2026. Elizabeth's mayor now sits on the board and welcomed the news.
But the people in Elizabeth, in the city that I represent now, will be able to access not only the Amtrak and the Northeast Corridor at another location, they'll also be able to access the AirTrain.
It's part of the Port Authority's capital program that included the award-winning new Terminal A and a proposed new AirTrain around the airport in Newark. The Port Authority also moved the long-awaited Midtown bus terminal replacement closer to reality by adopting a funding agreement with New York City. The authority would receive so-called pilots, payments in lieu of taxes, from new office tower developments that would help cover the new terminal's $10 billion price tag.
The close of this deal, with the support of the mayor, the community boards, the elected officials, is a critical forward step in funding the $10 billion bus terminal.
The old bus terminal will be torn down in 2029, the new one slated for completion in 2032. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
Well, all eyes are on New Jersey's embattled senior U.S. Senator Bob Menendez, who's facing a Monday filing deadline to decide if he wants to run for re-election in the U.S. Senate primary. Our very own D.C. correspondent Ben Hulock chased him down in the halls of the Capitol and is with me now for more. Ben, so good to finally have you on set. Welcome unofficially and officially to the team. You caught up with Menendez, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do. And what did he tell you?
You're right. He's been a bit elusive these days, logically, in the Capitol. He didn't say much. I caught him in the Senate subway, and he said that he will let us know this week. So it's Thursday. I took that to mean by the end of business Friday, tomorrow. Other than that, he really wasn't keen on talking about much.
Yeah, I mean, he's been saying that he's focused on the trial, which is slated to begin in May, focused on getting his defense up and proving that he's innocent in these corruption charges. But he is running out of time, and I wonder if there is a path for him if he decides suddenly to stay in it.
Conceivably, but it's hard. Tammy Murphy and Andy Kim are, of course, duking it out for the Democratic nod. That election date is in June. Theoretically, he could run as an independent. There are about 2,000 U.S. senators in history since the start of the country, 1789, this tally goes back, and only 77 have been independents or from a lesser third party. So he's really running out of options and the paths are closing.
Yeah, and I don't know what the statistics are in New Jersey, but independents typically don't fare well here, regardless of the election. I'm curious, though, about the race itself. You did a little digging into the financial disclosure forms for the candidates, First Lady Tammy Murphy, Congressman Andy Kim, Patricia Campos Medina, others who are running on the Democratic side. What did you find?
I didn't look at Campos Medina, but I looked at the heavy hitters, the ones who will likely win the nomination. Murphy has a lengthy filing. I've looked at dozens, maybe hundreds of filings in my reporting career. Hers is 69 pages, and it is a whole trove of information.
How does that stack up compared to other, I'm going to say, wealthy members of Congress whose reports you've looked at?
It's a safe bet that she would be toward, if she were elected, she would be toward the top of that list, and certainly among the wealthier members of Congress. Mitt Romney is quite a wealthy guy. He has a lengthy disclosure, as does Mark Warner, made a mint in the tech industry. He's a Virginia senator. But she is certainly towards the top of the list. By comparison, Senator Menendez, I think his disclosure was maybe 7 pages. Booker, I want to say, Cory Booker, that is, 6 pages. Andy Kim's was in the same ballpark. So hers is in a different galaxy.
What does that tell us about a candidate when we look at a report like that?
Frustratingly, at least to me, it doesn't tell you a whole lot. It gives you broad numbers and the general ballpark of what someone's worth. And I should add, on top of all of this, they state ranges, not only of assets, but of the income from those assets.
So what does that mean?
So Murphy, for example, the biggest item on her list I could find was a blind trust in her name. And I should point out the governor, her husband, has another blind trust under his name. But hers was worth a minimum of $5 million and a maximum of $25 million.
So now, we're not talking about a small chunk of change there. That's a wide range.
No, and $5 million is a heck of a lot of money to any average person. 25 is a different realm. And the money she said in this statement, in this report, that she gets from that blind trust annually is, again, this gaping range, $100K to $1 million. So there's a lot of guesswork. It's nice that these exist. It's certainly better than operating in the dark from a reporter's perspective,
sure.
But it's hazy.
Interesting, too, because we know Tammy Murphy already has a powerful perch, but money also gives access to power, of which there's plenty.
Of course.
Ben Hulak, good to have you in the studio.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
It's a delight.
4 years after the COVID-19 pandemic hit, New Jersey students are still recovering from the learning loss. A new Harvard-Stanford study finds we're one of 17 states where students are lagging in math. And those from low-income districts, they're affected the most. Senior correspondent Joanna Gagas has the details.
Even though we are technically out of COVID, the impact of COVID continues to linger.
And we're seeing it in our schools. The education scorecard was just released, showing New Jersey among 17 other states whose math scores in 2023 were lower than they were in 2019 before the pandemic. And the disparities are worse for students of color.
People have unrealistic expectations about what it's going to take to help students catch up.
Harvard University researcher Tom Kane helped author the scorecard report, and just to drive the point home that math is a critical skill, he says it all comes down to the numbers when trying to catch these students up.
Students in Newark and Patterson are more than a grade level behind, so that would mean that students would have to learn 150% of what they would typically learn in a school year, 2 years in a row, just to get back to where they were in 2019. So are we thinking like teachers are just gonna talk faster?
The report makes recommendations for districts. The main one, adding instructional time after school and in the summer.
For each student that attends 6 weeks of summer learning, you get about a quarter of a year's worth of additional growth. You know, so if students were to do that 4 summers in a row, that would make up, you know, on average for like a whole year loss. But if only 10 or 15% of students are attending summer learning, That's not going to solve the problem.
Districts have until the end of September to dedicate the last of the federal COVID relief funds to closing their educational gaps, or they'll have to give the money back. This is where state oversight is needed, says Advocates for Children of New Jersey's Mary Coogan.
State leadership needs to make sure this money is being allocated effectively and to work with the districts to make sure we find the most evidence-based programs that are going to help kids.
One of the biggest blown opportunities from this whole pandemic is that we have not systematically tracked what different districts are doing with the federal money. And so we've missed an opportunity to learn which of the strategies are most effective.
Last year, the state provided funding to districts that applied for an in-school initiative called High Impact Tutoring. Catherine Bassett runs one of them, the New Jersey Tutoring Corps, that's seen their students' math proficiency improve in just 1 year from 16% to 40%.
Pre-COVID, tutoring was not accessible to so many, the majority of our state's families, because of the cost. Post-COVID, post-pandemic, tutoring is available to all scholars who need it. And when we look at that report and we look at those numbers, what comes through to me is equity. We need to do more to get high-impact tutoring made available at no cost to all children who need it.
But for all the concern, Betsy Ginsburg from the Garden State Coalition of Schools remains optimistic.
In December 2023, the state board and the rest of us looked at results from the spring NJSLA testing. And we saw that gains are starting to happen. And I think that it is key to think about that.
Most agree we need to find out which efforts are having the most success. I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
A Texas charter bus company sued by New York City Mayor Eric Adams' administration will temporarily stop busing migrants to the city. Roadrunner Charters Incorporated this week entered an agreement with the Adams administration to halt the busing from the southern border to New York, New Jersey, and surrounding areas while the lawsuit plays out. New York City sued Roadrunner and 16 other bus companies in December for the cost of supporting the migrants and accused them of participating in Texas Governor Greg Abbott's, quote, bad faith plan to bring asylum seekers here and make them the responsibility of the government. In exchange for the pause, New York City will hold off on pursuing some $700 million officials say the city incurred to care for roughly 33,000 migrants bused to the city in the last 2 years. In all, Texas has sent more than 95,000 asylum seekers to so-called sanctuary cities, including New York, which brought its shelter system to a breaking point. Turns out Newark's job replacing lead water lines throughout the city isn't entirely over. An audit has so far found 12 partial lead service lines weren't properly replaced from the curb to the water main by a subcontractor. That's up from 3 in February when city officials first announced the audit after being made aware of the problem. Newark Mayor Roz Baraka and State Department of Environmental Protection Commissioner Sean LaTourette updated residents on the investigation last night via Facebook Live, saying the problems are not widespread. Those one dozen pipes were discovered out of 90 excavations from over 1,300 points evaluated, and said there's no reason to be concerned about drinking water quality. Corrosion control has been effective at keeping any remaining lead from leaching into the supply. But free water testing is still available for city residents who want it. Newark began replacing the service lines after elevated levels of lead in the city's drinking water garnered national attention. The city says the investigation is ongoing and criminal charges against the contractor are still possible. In our Spotlight on Business report, the Diocese of Camden just finalized the largest settlement involving a Roman Catholic church in the U.S. Under a plan approved by a bankruptcy judge, the diocese will pay out roughly $87 million to more than 300 survivors of clergy sexual abuse. The settlement was first announced in April 2022, but a judge made the final approval just days ago. Some of the survivors have waited decades for this, but their fight isn't over. According to one of the attorneys representing the group, the agreement allows survivors to sue the diocese insurers for additional payments for as much as $400 to $600 million. It was the insurers who blocked previous settlement plans. The agreement creates a trust and allows for new child protection measures. On Wall Street, stocks climbed to build on a record-setting rally. Here's how the markets closed.
Support for the Business Report provided by the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce, announcing its ReNew Jersey Business Summit and Expo, March 26th and 27th at Harrah's in Atlantic City. Event details online at njchamber.com.
And make sure to tune in to NJ Business Speed with Raven Santana this weekend. She takes an early look at the economic impact of the 2026 World Cup. Raven talks to host committee members and business leaders about what the next 2 years of preparation look like and how the state stands to benefit. Watch it Saturday morning at 10 a.m. on the NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. Jersey is already considered a leader when it comes to combating food insecurity and hunger. Now, two Democratic lawmakers want to create a new pipeline to ensure more food waste instead makes it onto the kitchen table by requiring some grocers and food suppliers to donate eligible food to local food banks and pantries. Raven Santana has the story.
Each year, millions of pounds of food go to waste. Rather than surplus food reaching the more than 800,000 people in New Jersey who are facing hunger, it's often tossed in the trash.
Sad reality is that around the United States, 40% of food goes uneaten.
That's why Assemblyman Bill Moen is introducing a bill to require certain supermarkets, grocery stores, and food suppliers to donate consumable food that would have otherwise been discarded. The legislation cleared the Assembly Health Committee.
And I think when we boil this down to, I think, a very micro level, every meal that we can rescue from disposal is a step towards New Jersey figuring out how we are building that sustainable future.
Moen says the goal is to ensure entities make a reasonable effort to donate excess food to various food banks, nonprofit organizations, and New Jersey residents.
To me, again, it's a no-brainer that we have supermarkets in New Jersey that are doing this now and are helping to fix this. The goal here is to just make sure that the rest of them, in a reasonable effort, are doing the same thing.
Currently, it is not a requirement for food suppliers to donate. While Moen has referred to the bill as a no-brainer, not everyone is on board. The president and CEO of the New Jersey Food Council, Linda Daugherty, released a statement opposing the bill, saying, "We have concerns about this legislation because there are circumstances that create barriers to donation. Some food retailers do not generate a large volume of surplus food that is suitable for donation, and the food pantries generally do not consider partnering with these retailers to be the best use of their resources. Some grocers and convenience stores have surplus prepared food, which is generally not able to be donated due to food safety issues."
Retail food donations are already a large and really significant part of the food supply that Fulfill and our sister food banks across the state and country rely on.
Triada Stampis is the president and CEO of Fulfill Food Bank and serves about 300 food pantries, soup kitchens, shelters, and other community distribution programs within Ocean and Monmouth counties. Despite some concerns, Stampis is in full support of the legislation.
"Last year, we received about 5 million pounds of food donations from all sources, but 70% of our donated food was from local retailers. From all of the grocery chains and the supermarkets that are in our communities that serve our shoppers."
She says the food donation partnership between local food retailers and Fulfill Food Bank have been a win-win.
"We are seeing almost 100,000 pantry visitors a month across our two counties. We've never seen numbers like that before.
Stampis says while she's concerned about food safety from these surplus donations, she is confident that current food safety guidelines will help prevent that.
Supermarkets have policies. They clear the shelves when things get close to that best buy date or sell by date. Much of that food is still able to be eaten perfectly good, just not able to be sold by that supermarket, not marketable for them.
Moen says he's welcoming stakeholders to the table to make the bill better, especially those who are concerned it creates potential barriers. The bill has been referred to the Food Security Committee. He now hopes it will be posted for consideration in the near future and passed by the summer. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Raven Santana.
And finally, for the first time in decades, the U.S. Navy's most decorated battleship today left its dock on the Camden waterfront and floated down the Delaware River with the help of tugboats en route to the Philadelphia Naval Yard. The famed battleship New Jersey getting a proper send-off from the governor and even some veterans who served on the vessel. The World War II-era ship will undergo extensive maintenance, expected to take about 2 months. The first stop is the Paulsboro Marine Terminal, where the massive ship will be balanced and prepped for dry docking. Three major repair projects are planned, including inspecting and repainting the ship's hull and fixing the anti-corrosion system underneath the ship. That's important. Once it's all done, the battleship, which has served as a floating museum since 2011, will look as sharp as it did all those years ago. And that's going to do it for us tonight. But make sure you catch Reporters Roundtable tomorrow. David Cruz looks at this week's marathon court hearing on Congressman Andy Kim's lawsuit to dismantle the party line. Kicking it off with Julia Sass Rubin from Rutgers University, who was an expert witness in the case. Then a panel of local reporters break down this week's political headlines. Watch Roundtable tomorrow at noon on the NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. I'm Brianna Venosi for the entire NJ Spotlight News team. Thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. And by the PSCG Foundation.